Just new. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Gopi Channa Pahala Bhagavare Hari. Gopi Channa Pahala Bhagavare Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari.
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parabraja Gachara Sotera Sadashi Shindis Vine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai
ISKCON Founder Chari Srila Prabhupada
Jai
Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaura Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guru. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminita Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devam Gauravani Bhacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashtu Chadisitane. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 21, Explanation of the Vedic Path, Text 7 today. Desha kaladi bhavanam astunam amasatama gunado shau vidhiyate niyamartam hikarmanam desha kaladi bhavanam Vastunam amasatama gunadoshau vidiyate niyamartam hikarmanam deshakalari bhavanam vastunam amasatama Guna-dosha-vidiyeta niyamartam hikarmanam
desha-kalari-bhavanam
Vaishnavis. Desha of space, Kala, time, Adi, and so on, Bhavanam, of such states of existence, Vastunam, of things, Mama, by me, Sattama, O most saintly Uddhava, Gunadosha, piety and sin, Vidhiyate, are established, Niyama Artam, for the restriction, he, certainly, Karmanam, of fruitive activity. O saintly, translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. O saintly Uddhava, in order to restrict materialistic activities, I have established that which is proper and improper among all material things, including time, space, and all physical objects. Report. The word niyamartam, in order to restrict, is significant in this verse. A conditioned soul falsely identifies with its material senses and thus considers anything giving immediate satisfaction to the body to be good and anything inconvenient or disturbing to be bad. By higher intelligence, however, one recognizes long-term self-interest and danger. For example, medicine may be immediately bitter, but by calculating one's long-term interest, one accepts the bitter medicine to cure a disease that is not immediately troublesome, but ultimately fatal. Similarly, Vedic literature restricts the sinful propensities of human beings by establishing what is proper and what is improper amongst all objects of activities in the material world. Because everyone must eat, the Vedas describe foods in the mode of goodness and not those which are sinful, such as meat, fish, and eggs. Similarly, one is advised to live in peaceful and pious community and not in association with sinful persons, nor in an unclean or turbulent environment. By designating and restricting the exploitation of the material world, Vedic knowledge gradually brings a conditioned soul to the platform of material goodness. At that stage, one becomes eligible to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead and enter the transcendental stage of life. It should be remembered that such mere eligibility does not constitute actual qualification. Without Krishna consciousness, mere mundane piety can never qualify a conditioned soul to go back home, back to Godhead. Within this world, we are all infected by false pride, which must be diminished through submission to the Vedic injunctions. One who is completely engaged in the loving service of the Lord need not adopt these preliminary methods, for he directly contacts the personality of Godhead through the spontaneous process of surrender. In the previous verse, the Lord explained why the Vedic literatures assign different values to the bodies of different living entities. And here the Lord explains the Vedic value system in regard to the material objects that interact with these bodies. Om Gyanatim Randasha Gananjana Salakaya Chaksurunamitamena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Banchikopa Trugishtra Kupasindhu Vyagacha Patidana Pavanagyo Vaishamevyo Namo Namaha. Okay. One second, a few technical difficulties here. Decided to turn off and had to be rebooted on me. Anyway, this is an important verse, as they all are, and there is a progression or a succession that's given here in the Bhagavatam. It's sometimes not immediately apparent. In fact, it can be a little bit confusing. Now we're talking about piety and impiety, what is sinful, what is, what is proper, what is not proper, and how this relates to Krishna consciousness. Sometimes it seems as though in chapter 20, in the beginning, in chapter 21, we go a little bit back and forth between these ideas of, material piety and impiety, what is good, what is not good, is karma and jnana useful or not useful, or only bhakti. So we've had this discussion back and forth a little bit, and it's kind of like in chapter 21 is hitting from a little different angle, where in the last couple of verses they start talking about the material elements. And the commonality of the material elements was established. Everything is made up of these elements. So, in one hand, of course, the transcendental vision is above duality. We're seeing, okay, there's all these material elements, we're above that, we're not seeing that, we're seeing spirit. But there needs to be distinctions even within matter, with even how we perceive matter. And that's what's being discussed in terms of piety and impiety, or as is the chapter of this verse, the Vedic path. So the Vedic path that's being described here is really a matter of making some distinctions within the material sphere, within the material realm, but there's a purpose for it, and that is to elevate human beings. Now, in yesterday's verse in class, we learned a lot about the identification with matter and the identification with material being the primary problem for the jiva. So that's kind of where we start. We start with we're in this material world due to, as was described, the throwing and covering potencies, where false ego, the contact point of the material energy for the jiva is false ego. False ego means false identification with matter. So therefore, once we've accepted this material body, gross and subtle body, as who we are, that's where all our problems begin. And here we are in this material world, very entangled, life after life. So the chapter discusses how we can elevate to the higher modes of nature and how those higher modes lead to spiritual perfection. So the mode of goodness is not the goal, but a platform to advance in spiritual life. I wanted to read a couple paragraphs here. This is Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur's purport a few verses earlier, the verse 2 purport, where he kind of gives a little setting, describes what we're talking about and where we're going. There's a certain quaintness about his writing, but I find it kind of charming, interesting. Please hear about the nature of good and bad qualities. The jnani fixed in his qualification for jnana and the karmi fixed in his qualification for karma are approved as good. However, because both cannot give their results by themselves, karma and jnana must be performed with a mixture of bhakti. Otherwise, it does not give any result. So that's an important point. While we're talking about these processes of karma and jnana, we're not going to get the ultimate good without bhakti. And those processes themselves cannot be effective without some element of bhakti mixed in. On the other hand, being fixed in bhakti, as is done by the Shuddha Bhakta, pure devotee, is a good quality, since bhakti has the power to give its own result. Bhakti should not be performed with any mixture of karma or jnana, since those processes cannot give independent results anyway. A person, this is a quote from Bhagavatam 11.11.32, a few chapters ago. A person who understanding good and bad aspects of Dharma as taught by me gives up all duties and simply worships me as best of all. Bhakti Vishwanath says, by this it is understood that if there is a mixture of karma or jnana, pure bhakti disappears. Then he says, this is how good and bad are determined. So as we look at all this pious, impious, good and bad, we see that basically the highest good is that which increases bhakti. If it leads to increase in our devotional service to Krishna, in the surrendering process, developing a love of God, then it is good. So that's sort of the measuring stick that the Vaishnava makes for all activities. So, as we were saying yesterday and today again, the conditioned soul is very attracted to matter and enjoyment of senses. Most of the living entities are not on this path of bhakti, leading to the ultimate goal. That enjoyment activity is conducted within the three modes of nature. And that's extensively discussed in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, the modes of nature, where, you know, food in the different modes, activity in the different modes, charity in the different modes, right? All of these different activities are described, how they could be performed in goodness, passion, or ignorance. So the jiva, once entering this material atmosphere, can elevate or degrade himself through pious or impious activities, depending upon the modes of nature that one associates with and acts in. So, there needs to be some spiritual principle. There needs to be principles of religion. Otherwise, we have, as we often have in our postmodernistic society, is Stitidi Muni here? Because he'll correct me if I get this wrong philosophically, but he's probably on the internet and he'll send me an email. So, I believe one of the principles... Are you here? Behind that? Okay, she's behind the Vyasasana, I can't tell. Anyway, the principle of our modern age, I think it's part of postmodernistic philosophy, I may be wrong, is basically that there's no absolutes. That one, you know, does what one does, not that one acts evilly or immorally necessarily, but there's no real absolutes. You kind of wing it. As you see, you act according to, you know, whatever you think is going to be the best. But what does this lead to? If there's really no spiritual principle, then all ethics and morals are equal. I could make a good argument for anything. I'm sure Hitler had his reasons for killing millions of people, or Stalin. In other words, almost any, you know, terrorists can justify killing thousands of innocent women and children because of some so-called higher cause. If there is not real morality, anything can be justified. And even on a much smaller level, of course, the individual can do the same thing. So the purpose of life without a strong religious principle is basically to enjoy however one can. The purpose of life becomes personal gratification, whatever is pleasing. So then there's no check on exploitation of people, what to speak of animals, the earth, and no moral behavior. Can people hear me still?
Yes.
Yeah, speak loudly.
If I speak real loudly, they'll hear me on the internet too? And so we see wars, abortion, animal killing, abuse. These are the results of an immoral society that has no religious foundation. And the Bhagavad Gita tells us what the society looks like. 1689, they say this world is unreal with no foundation and no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and it has no cause other than lust. Following such conclusions, the demoniac, who are lost to themselves and have no intelligence, engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. This is what we're left with. Thus, one must act to elevate oneself in the human form of life. And that means acting in the higher modes of nature, because the lower modes lead to suffering for oneself and to others. The Bhagavatam 12.8.45, Markandeya Rishi, in his prayers to Narayan, saying, you, Krishna, specifically employ the mode of goodness to liberate the conditioned souls. The other two modes simply bring them suffering, illusion, and fear. So the lower modes and impious activities lead to sinful activities. They cause suffering to others, harm to the world, and then incur karmic reactions to the actors.
Geneva who is committing these activities. And Hugh Robinson in a lecture in December 1970. Therefore, all sinful activities are done in ignorance or in mixed up passion and ignorance. Therefore, one has to raise himself to the quality of goodness. Now, this leads to an important point that was made in the earlier part of the purport we read today, that the living entity often chooses immediate pleasure over long-term benefit. And, of course, we're very familiar with those terms, treis, which means long-term benefit, and treis, which is immediate satisfaction. And Prabhupada would give the example, in many examples, but children would like to play all day. If you ask an 8-year-old, do you want to go to school or do you want to play? Well, 90% of the time, they will say they want to play. But that's not going to be for their ultimate benefit. The parents know that, the teachers know that. Sorry, you got to learn math and reading and everything else that they learn, because this is going to be for your long-term ultimate benefit. The example given the purport is taking medicine. And an interesting explanation that was made there said the condition may not appear to cause immediate problem, but will eventually kill you. So if you're really, really sick, you're really, you know, or you've been in an accident, and you're really, you know, bones are broken, etc., it's obvious. You're injured, you're hurt, you're sick. You have to go to the doctor, you have to do something, but sometimes it's not so obvious. You know. So I had a personal example of that. Probably good or not, I mean, yet. I went to for something else. I think I had a cough or bronchitis or something. And I went to a doctor and he did a routine blood test. He said, well, you know, you haven't had this for a long time. You should get a whole thing. All right, whatever. And turned out I had cancer. Okay. It's one of those, they say, well, here's the bad news is you have cancer. The good news is it's highly treatable. Obviously, it was. That was 10 years ago. And here I am today, still alive. But the point was, when you... there's a situation where I didn't know anything was really wrong. But if it were untreated and unfound, I probably, you know, eventually would have killed me. Now, if you have something like cancer, you have certain possibilities for remedies. Like chemotherapy, radiation, surgery. Or if you don't want to go that route, you're going to some extreme health regime, you know, all kinds of fasting, whatever. The point is that none of those are very viable. None of them are good choices. None of them are things you really want to do. They're not pleasant, but it's necessary to restore the natural, healthy condition. So, similarly, some restriction is necessary for this material body and senses to restore our natural condition of our of pure spirit soul and later to the Krishna to revive that eternal spiritual nature. So we make some temporary restrictions or some unpleasant procedure for future gain, whether it's going to school or taking medicine. In the same way, we have to do that in spiritual life. It's interesting, you know, you meet people, meet a lot of people these days, especially younger people, who are interested in spiritual life, and they always ask them, oh, I do this, I do yoga, or I do some process. Most of the time, you'll see that those processes don't require a lot of restriction. You know, they're pretty much, you know, oh, I go and I do some meditation, I do some exercises, but I don't really have to change my life much. And that's kind of what people are looking for. You know, sort of the easy path, without much restriction, without much change. Now, that's an natural tendency. But one requires knowledge from the guru and from the shastras understands that there needs to be some restriction on the senses. Prabhupada said this process is like poison in the beginning and nectar in the end. Of course, material life is nectar in the beginning, poison in the end. But even that poison in the beginning, that's the extreme state. Because there's also a lot of nectar in the beginning, a lot of pleasure, even in the beginning of Krishna consciousness. In the Bhakti Samrita Sindhu, we learned that nectar devotion, that relief of suffering is one of the first aspects of Krishna consciousness. Even at the process of sadhana. You know, there's the six symptoms of devotional service, and the first two occur at the state of sadhana, where the other four are bhava and prema. But those first two, it says the devotion, with the devotional creeper, once it begins, there are two fresh leaves that sprout, and they represent in sadhana bhakti. The first first leaf is called Kleshagni, the destroyer of distress, and the second is Subhada.
Subhada.
The bestower of good fortune. Now that's in the beginning. Those of us who are performing sadhana bhakti, you leave yourself in the bestower of good fortune. So, everything is auspicious by Krishna consciousness. Even the beginning, there may be a little poison that we're restricting the style of things that we're not used to, but, you know, I mean, what do we really have to restrict and think about? You know, become completely degraded by intoxication, you know, I mean, I don't know any devotees who really are sorry they gave up eating meat, you know. You know, it's like, so even those restrictions are really quite mild, very doable, and they lead to a happy life. Because they do put us in the mode of goodness, which brings happiness. So, the Vedic Shastric system restricts the sense of the body for spiritual benefit. And when one does elevate the mode of goodness, there is some happiness derived from that. And in that more purified platform, one can then begin to understand real spiritual life. So, now what's the problem with that? Why not? A lot of people are attracted to the mode of goodness. Why not just lead a good life? Have a little bit of spiritual life put in there. The problem is that the mode of goodness is a necessary but not sufficient condition for Krishna consciousness. There aren't very many, but there are people who fall for its principles who have no very little spiritual life. So it's not automatic, but it is a platform that is favorable. But the problem is that if one is only in the mode of goodness, one can become conditioned to that sense of happiness, and it's actually material. And in fact, as Bhagavad explains this in the purport to Bhagavad Gita 14.6, the difficulty here is that when a living entity is situated in the mode of goodness, he becomes conditioned to feel that he is advanced in knowledge and better than others. The sense of advanced happiness in conditioned life makes them bound by the mode of goodness and pure nature. As long as they have attraction for working in that way, they have to take some type of body in the modes of nature. So that's the downside. You're still in the modes of nature, you're still in this material world. You may take a very good birth in this material world, maybe even the heavenly planets, but you're still here. Abha, Mabha, Maloka. From the highest to the lowest, all places of misery. Repeat a line from today's purport because it's quite relevant. It said, Vedic knowledge gradually brings the conditioned soul to the platform of material goodness. At that stage, one becomes eligible to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead and enter the transcendental stage of life. Now, this next line is what I wanted to remember. It should be remembered that such mere eligibility does not constitute actual qualification. Without Krishna consciousness, mere mundane piety can never qualify a conditioned soul to go back to God. So, we need to go beyond material piety and realize our sanatana dharma, our eternal religious duty, not just our dharma in this material world, but sanatana dharma, service to the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam confirms this, that the highest morality in religion is to follow the instructions of God. This is discussed a lot in the sixth canto in the first three chapters, the story of Ajamil and the different discussions between the Yamadutas and the, my mind just went blank. The Yamadutas, the Vishnudutas, and Yamaraj. The Yamadutas said, their idea of religious principles, which was not wrong, was Vede Prani Viko Dharma Yatharmasta Vibharyaya. That which is described in the Vedas constitutes Dharma. Who's hearing me? Thank you. Since I don't have a mic, I... That which is described in the Vedas constitutes Dharma, religious principle, and the opposite is irreligious. Well, that's true enough. But later, Yamaraj corrects that a little bit. And he says, Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranita. Real religious principles are enacted by the Supreme Personality of God. So not just Vedic injunctions, but whatever Krishna says, that is real religion, that's real dharma. And we see this lesson a lot. Bhagavad Gita, one of the main lessons of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna had, I did a class once on this, and I listed there about 10 or 12, I know a whole lot, reasons that Arjuna gave why not to fight, and they were good reasons. They were good moral reasons, and from a moral point of view, Arjuna, good point. Just forget the vow. You know, you're a very pious, very, you know, person, but he was wrong because it wasn't what Krishna wanted. And the higher principle, the spiritual principle, was to please Krishna, to follow Krishna, to follow his order and instruction. And of course, Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna realizes that, and he comes to the point of surrender to Krishna. Whatever you want, I will do. So we have religious duty, dharma, and we have sanatana dharma. And of course, our real duty is devotional service to the Lord. We don't neglect other responsibilities. And that's another neophyte misunderstanding we sometimes have. Oh, I'm transcendental everything, I can do anything I want, I have no responsibility. No. That's not the way of Vaishnava. We don't neglect our duties, but we don't neglect our primary duty, which is devotional service to Krishna. That we must maintain. So our actual dharma, Prabhupada explained. This is a purport to Bhagavatam 126. And what is actual dharma? So here it is explained, Savaitam Paro Dharma. Para means superior. Not this religion, Hindu religion, Muslim religion, Christian religion, or so many other religions. That is also dharma. That is temporary. Paro Dharma means permanent dharma, eternal dharma, sanatana dharma. So, how do we act as devotees? We disregard the laws, morals, standards in society? No. First of all, we don't create a disturbance in society. We want to also set example of moral and ethical conduct. Because as we were just saying, immoral conduct, immoral activity leads to horrible results and great suffering to living entities. So we want to show that example. We follow the Brahminical codes and the mode of goodness. In other words, when you're in the material world, you have to act within the modes, at least externally. So how are you going to act? Mode of ignorance? Of course not. We want to act in a mode of goodness. We want to act in a pious way. And we want to keep ourselves sufficiently pure to perform devotional service. Right? That's why initiation, four regular principles, 16 rounds. Four regular principles, mode of goodness, platform. To be able to do 16 rounds and advance in Krishna consciousness. So, we want to act in a moral way in society, and at the same time we understand the higher purpose. And that material morality is really not of value if it is not connected with Krishna and leads to this higher purpose. So the devotee actually does not act in sattva mode of goodness. The advanced devotee should be acting in true sattva, the pure goodness, state of pure goodness. And that activity in Krishna consciousness will lead to purification. Jiva Goswami, in one of his purports to Bhakti Samrita Sindhu, says, good qualities appear spontaneously when one is extremely dedicated to Krishna consciousness. So sometimes we hear one gains all good qualities by being a devotee. And they do appear spontaneously, but there's a caveat, when one is extremely dedicated. In other words, you can't do anything, any activity, not follow principles, not perform devotional service, and think, well, I'm a devotee, all these qualities are going to appear. If one is following the practice of Krishna consciousness under the order of the spiritual master, yes, then eventually all those good qualities will appear. One other thing about the way that these modes work for the devotees. This is a lecture. I really like this one because Prabhupada made it real clear here. Prabhupada said, you have to transcend all the material qualities, even sattva-guna. Therefore, a Vaishnava is above sattva-guna. Think about that. But the brahminical quality is also included. A Vaishnava is already a Brahman. We give a Vaishnava the sacred thread, the mark of becoming a Brahman, because without becoming a Brahman, no one can come to the platform of Vaishnava. That is the idea. Then Prabhupada says, nobody should come to the platform of Shuddha Sattva without being elevated to the Sattva Guna platform. So in other words, began to skip it and say, "Oh, I'm in a pure devotional platform. I'm in pure goodness." No. You have to be situated in a mode of goodness, minimal, to be able to become elevated to Shiva self. So it's intrinsically connected to spiritual life. So our challenges on the path of bhakti are this mixed devotional service, trying to attain this position of Shiva self, pure goodness, which means completely surrendered to the lotus feet of Krishna, basically. Giving up material life, fully embracing spiritual life, and our service to Krishna. So you might remember in the beginning, he said, by this it's understood if there's a mixture of karma jnana, pure bhakti disappears. That is how the term. So we all perform devotional service with some mixture of modes, some mixture of karma jnana. I mean, that's natural. That's our beginning, our neophyte stage. But we do want to try to minimize that. And part of that is by trying to minimize those obstacles that we find in our growth of Krishna consciousness. And of course, we often, one of the famous examples in that devotion that I'm going to talk about is the Bhakti Lata beach, the seed of devotional service, the Bhakti Lata, the creeper of devotional service. So the metaphor here is the growing plant, which represents bhakti's growing. And what are some of the problems with growing a creeper? Well, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila 1958-160 tells us, sometimes unwanted creepers, such as the creepers of desire for material enjoyment and liberation, there we have, karma jnana, grow along with the creeper of devotional service. The varieties of such unwanted creepers are unlimited, as we all discovered. Some unnecessary creepers growing with the bhakti creeper are creepers of behavior unacceptable to those trying to attain perfection, diplomatic behavior, animal killing, mundane profiteering, mundane adoration, and mundane importance. These are all the weeds that choke our devotional creeper. All of these are unwanted creepers. If one does not distinguish between the bhakti creeper and the other creepers, the sprinkling of water, what's the sprinkling of water? Spirit enchanted, the nine process of devotional service, is misused because the other creepers are nourished while the bhakti creepers curtail. I experienced this. I think I mentioned this before, but it's been a while. I had this very, very nice tree. It's called a chase tree. There's one growing out here, and they have these beautiful purple flowers that come out right now. They're all in bloom. I had this tree that I planted years ago, and part of it was kind of like doing all right, but not real well. Another half of it seemed like it was really kind of flourishing, very strong. You know, and I looked at it, and I kept thinking, something's wrong here. Finally, after a long time, I figured out that this one half actually wasn't a tree. It was a big weed, huge weed, that had almost the same leaves and really looked like a tree. It's not a creeper, look at the bush. So obviously I dug it out, got rid of it, and now this is the tree, of course. Then it began to flourish. The shrubs started to get well after I got rid of that very vigorous, huge weed that looked like it, but was choking it out and was sucking out all the energy. So all I was watering, fertilizing, taking care of that plant, but what was I watering? The weed. You know, anyway, very vivid example. Yes, this is a good metaphor for what happens with the bhakti lata beach. So we need to continue to be, you know, pulling the weeds. We need to not only be watering the plant with our hearing and chanting, watering the devotional creeper, but making sure that all of these things are not choking it out that were mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Adoration, mundane importance, mundane profiteering, most of us aren't doing animal killing, hopefully. Diplomatic behavior, that's a tough one, isn't it? Be a little political here and there, especially in our internet age. I think Facebook is filled with diplomatic behavior, but anyway. So these are things we need to continue to strive to become more pure in our devotional service, it's not that we are really pure or think that we're pure or we get puffed up. We were talking about that the other day. I don't know, some class. You know, this idea of becoming falsely proud. You know, we don't want that. But we want to be in the safe situation. The way that we keep ourselves safe in Krishna consciousness is simply by following the path of the Acharyas and Śrīla Prabhupāda. Then we're safely connected. And sometimes if we're not sure, should we do this, should we do that? I mean, there's just a real simple check. What would Śrīla Prabhupāda want? And we're not always clear. And we have differences, there are differences about that. Sometimes we disagree. But at least if the disagreement is there about I think Śrīla Prabhupāda would want this, maybe, but I think Śrīla Prabhupāda would want that, that's actually a healthy discussion. Right? That's a healthy disagreement. You know, it's if we're staying within what would please Śrīla Prabhupāda, what would please Krishna, obviously. Okay. So, you want to continue the process of sadhana as given to us by Prabhupāda. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:17 says, although one may neutralize the reactions of sinful life through austerity, charity, vows, and other such methods, these pious activities cannot uproot the material desires in one's heart. So all those anarchas that are there, all these other methods, mode of goodness, karma jnana, really can't uproot the seed of desire in the heart. However, if one serves the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, he is immediately free from all such contamination. So the simple answer is, how do we get pure? How do we get rid of those contaminations? How do we get rid of these anarchas? We simply continue the process of bhakti. I mean, it's such a simple answer, but it's true. It's a very fairly simple, straightforward process. If we engage with Krishna consciousness as given by the Guru, we will become purified. And we are very fortunate to have, because Lord Chaitanya made the path easy for us. Adi 9:29 says, not considering who asked for it, who did not, nor who was fit or who was unfit to receive it, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu distributed the fruit of devotional service. So it doesn't matter whatever qualification, lack of qualification we came with, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving us his mercy. Coming through the Guru, and therefore we have everything we need to advance in Krishna consciousness. Okay? Thank you very much. All glories to Śrīla Prabhupāda. Forgot? Well, you all have to speak loudly with the mics.
You said that the karmis and the jnanis, without bhakti, cannot achieve their goal. But it appears to me that, well, there's a lot of wealthy, famous people in the world. Isn't that a karmi? And there's a lot of almost quote-unquote geniuses, or very intelligent people with many titles, degrees after the name. So,
I understand your question. I have to admit, I usually try to stay within my level of realization and speak about things that I think I understand or at least can defend. Now, I was a little bit on a stretch on this one. I don't know if I fully understand that myself. I thought it was a really interesting point I wanted to mention. Because we do see that, you know, there are, you know, you're a karmi, you know, in other words, you perform karmic activity and there is some result. So why is it that there must be a mixture of bhakti? Now, I'm assuming that's meaning they're not going to get the real result that they want. They won't get an ultimate result. They may get a very temporary result, but it won't really be the satisfaction of the result that they want. If anyone else has any realization on that, feel free to give it a shot. Let's go with the Janasmi and Mukunda.
Well, my understanding is not just karma kanda, it's karma yoga, you know, which is to bring us closer to Krishna, and same thing with jnana yoga.
Okay.
So, you know, that element of devotion, you know, is important to make that practice, because that's the goal of
certainly a possible explanation. In other words, if we look at it as karma yoga, jnana yoga, then we can see there has to be some element of bhakti for them to achieve higher results. Okay.
Yeah, I would echo that. I also had a question. I wanted to get the quotes from the different places you got. But also, yeah, I don't know if that the devotion also is like also a shadow devotion. It doesn't mean a representative of pure bhakti, but nobody can accomplish anything without some kind of devotion. Nobody can become famous, rich, wealthy, learned, or anything without some devotion. It's not some sort of bhakti, it's not that kind of bhakti, but it's the shadow of that devotion. It must be devoted to the material energy, which is a shakti bhava.
Yes, it's just with a mixture of bhakti. It doesn't mean pure bhakti. But, you know, I think that's another good explanation. I mean, you have to have some devotion to whatever you're doing. For a jnani to get a personal realization requires a lot of devotion to a very rigid process of meditation or whatever.
You ever notice the quote that the first one from Krishna talks about today? You go reverse order, the Adi Kona, is the last one I quoted?
The last one I read? About good fortune, who's good, who's unfit?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's Adi 9:29.
Okay. And then he wants to be shown how about the calmering.
That I read in the beginning? Is the longer one? The longer one I read in the beginning?
Yeah.
That's 3-4 to just a few verses ago, 11:21-2.
11:21.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was a little more in there, but I missed a bit. It was pretty much the essence of it. Yeah. Under
first of all, I was very happy to see that you're quoting verses and you're really chanting. I was really happy.
What, did I quote 20 verses?
Yeah, 3 verses you quoted. It's like
I have to look up and write it now.
You said Abraham, Brahmana, and Luka, you quoted that verse very clearly.
All right, I know a couple. Yeah. I know the first lines of a few.
No, but that was very nice, very inspiring.
Thank you. Okay.
I was thinking that you emphasized about the glory of Sattva Gun, that is the minimum requirement to enter into pure goodness.
Yeah.
At the same time, you gave a warning that that can be dangerous if you do not progress far.
Yeah.
And I just had an experience with a few Gurukul boys other than the shop, and Nabin mentioned. I said, Prabhu, I have a good life, I have a good income, he's a dentist, you know, I have a good life, everything is fine. I don't feel any impetus to chant more. I just do 2 rounds since my childhood, and that's I'm happy with this. And his fiance, she said, well, I just started, I thought I'll do more. But it makes sense, like, we have everything what we need. So, and from that experience, and then Vishwanathachudra Thakur was quoting, that Sattva Gun has another danger, that the impetus to progress is absent. And that can be very dangerous.
The one feels just satisfied.
Correct.
And one becomes complacent.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's why that question raised, do you want to use Krishna consciousness to have a beautiful, pious, happy life here for many life, or do you want to make it last slide and be serious and get out.
Yeah. That's an excellent point. Thank you for that. Yeah. We'll go to Yamaraj and go back to a couple of second rounds. Okay. Yamaraj?
Yeah, thank you for your class. Spiritual Warrior 5 by Confucius Thomas says that if we don't make spiritual advancement, we have to make spiritual advancement. And if we don't, then we will fall down.
Okay. Thank you.
During my travels and the last speaking trips, it was such a difficult thing that I found so many groups, even devotees, who are very much part of various kinds of seminars for self-improvement and so forth, and they're really wrought with the mode of goodness.
Yeah.
And it was such a difficult thing because without wanting to discourage people, you know, the process is somewhat not vetted, obviously by our Veda Sastra, certainly not by Srila Prabhupada. At the same time, you don't want to discourage people, so it was a really trying thing, because people feel a sense of happiness and a sense of illumination by going to these things, but that's why I took all the quotes you just had, because really, it'll condition you to happiness that's not genuine and will, you know, sort of quench the desire to obtain Kumbhaki. It's a really difficult thing. It's pretty
concern, but it's certainly something that we know. And we can see, we talk about getting conditioned to the happiness and motive of goodness. You know, it's not theoretical. That's an example of exactly how it does happen with devotees. And also the example you gave, someone, especially because if someone is someone pious, they've done devotional service in their last lifetime, probably. So, you know, in other words, they are given by their past activities a fairly good life, fairly happy, not a lot of suffering, although some of those even young people do experience great suffering. And there's no guarantee. You know, there's no guarantee of anybody not suffering in this material world. You know, so it's a real mixed bag there. But yeah, and that again, that complacency, you know, can be a real issue. And it's like temporary cessation of pain, temporary cessation of anxiety or stress or whatever it may be. But it really will not last without Krishna consciousness. This is something that we learn after years and years, many, many years of counseling devotees, that unless there is, you know, Krishna consciousness in there, in the mix, it's not really going to work. You can teach communication skills, you can do this, you can have our relationships, but unless Krishna's there, it's going to be a temporary fix. And so all of these things, I would say that you should not do these things, not necessarily, but do them as a way of overcoming obstacles to bring us to the real process of sadhana bhakti and devotional service to Krishna. As we said, that's our measure, what's good and bad. If it brings us to more and more pure devotional service, then it's a good thing to do. I mean, if a person, like I know some people who are like totally out of Krishna consciousness, and they did some of these things and kind of helped them bring them closer. I've seen others who went kind of the other way. So that's the thing. If it brings us closer to the practice of bhakti, then it's probably good. Yeah. I fully understand what you're saying. Okay, I think we're back to where we're going. Oh, sorry, we got to go to the new person. Madonna Honda and Higata. When you see the suffering of the conditioned souls and you confront that and you realize that you have a process, you have a remedy, you have a way of alleviating that you just have to give others, that actually helps convince ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, when we're preaching to others, we're also preaching to ourselves, right? Because we're hearing it as well. And, you know, and we get conviction. And I think the other thing that happens is, you're saying, like, part of Lord Chaitanya's process. And so when we do that, you said, like, you know, Nityananda and Prachajaga and Mata, you're getting the blessings and the mercy of Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya, and we feel that. So the people who go out and preach, I don't do as much as I should, they feel empowered. They do feel that. So that's a great way of breaking the complacency of, oh, I'm just happy here in my kind of mode of goodness life. And thank you, that we got there.
Devotee,
yeah. But attracted to mental speculation, obviously liberation, the goal of liberation. Ultimately, the Yanni wants to understand Brahman and become liberated. You know, now,
devotees don't necessarily want to be in the Brahma Jyoti, but sometimes there's an attraction to that mental speculation and just an intellectual sort of a mental approach. That's a little contamination. And by the way, these things aren't pure. I don't remember all the terminology, some of you might, but there's different stages. There's a person who's a jnani who has some bhakti mixed in. There's a person who's more of a devotee with some jnani mixed in. You know, it goes at, you know, it's differentiated. I would say devotees have more problems with karma than should have. In other words, you know, material desire is fruitive work. You know, we want some material gain. Tend to have more issues with that than jnani. And you're going to have the last one.
I was just thinking of when we were discussing motive with this happiness in the Bhagavad Gita, that famous 13, 18, 12, the process of knowledge, when it says one should perceive the evil, birth, death, disease, and old age, and the way the Prabhupada deals with it in the first word, he says these things should be discussed. As far as disease and old age are concerned, everyone gets practical experience, I think more so now than ever. No one wants to be diseased, no one wants to be old, but there's no avoiding these. Unless we have a pessimistic view of material life, considering the distress of birth, death, disease, and old age, there's no impetus for us making advancements in spiritual life. So, because sometimes we get accused of, oh, you're a pessimist. So I said, well, it is part of our philosophy that it says without being a pessimist, there's no impetus. Prabhupada writes, there's no impetus. Yeah. So he would also sometimes say that we could die at any moment. You know, are you young or old? Everyone's old, anybody could die at any time. And we're not very advanced. So to create that impetus.
Exactly. And just to round it out, Prabhupada also said, we should be materially pessimistic and spiritually optimistic. Thank you. Jai Prabhu.